For Off the Hook coming up in the next hour. Excuse me. And we're going to transition to that program right now. So stay tuned for Off the Hook. WBAI New York, WBAI.org. Stay tuned.
It is 7 o'clock, more or less. It's time on WBAI New York for another edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. For me, the bombs were the best effect of words. I hope that's understood.
Everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm over here. Can you read me?
I could never read you, Kyle. I can, at best, give a wild guess. But
well, thanks for trying.
Yeah, I do try. We have Alex.
Good evening.
We have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Gila.
Good evening.
Welcome to all you folks in Skype land. Well, you know, got some things to say. Yeah, I'm outraged. I mean, I'm sure we all are outraged. I'm sure we're all fed up and just, you know, basically trying to figure out how best to respond to this latest outrage, you know, this latest injustice. And you all know what I'm talking about, right? It's basically what we are expected to do now. Okay, in New York City, when we go into New York City, we are now expected to show proof that we have been vaccinated before we can go into a restaurant or into a gym, the two places I like to go to the most. And now I'm told that I'm going to have this card that I have in my hand, all right? I'm going to show this at the door when I go into a restaurant. All right, so let me explain to you my problem with this. This thing, look at it, it has my name on it, okay? I am now giving my name to the person at the restaurant, when normally I wouldn't do that until when I was giving him my credit card, okay? So now I'm expected to give him this information before I even set foot in the establishment. Yeah, it's got my name on it, not in my handwriting, someone else wrote my name. But now the guy at the door knows my name. He knows that I've been vaccinated. He knows that he even knows the date that I got vaccinated. I mean, where does this stop? You know, it is such an infringement, on our liberties. We have to do something about this. Now, you know, it's bad enough that when I give my credit card to the establishment, they have my name. I always cross it out. You know, when they give the receipt, I always cross it out. And then I ask them in a loud tone of voice, who am I? You know, and see if they remember my name. And sometimes they do, and then I just shout out other names, David, Phil, George, until they don't remember my name anymore. That is what the Founding Fathers had in mind, okay? It's called anonymity. It's one of our cherished God-given rights by the United States of America. And I will be good and goddamned if I'm going to show this piece of paper just to walk through the door and use my credit card inside an establishment. It's just I'm livid. I'm livid that we are expected to do something like this. How dare them? I have no other words. Alex, you know what I'm talking about, right?
To a certain extent.
It's outrageous. What a sacrifice for everybody to have to do this, to have to carry. It's first of all another piece of paper I have to carry in my pocket. You know how many things I have to carry now? They want me to carry a license. They want me to carry the credit card to pay for things. Now they want me to carry this to prove that I was vaccinated so I can go in and do things.
Well, I mean, my biggest gripe with the whole situation is that the vaccine card doesn't actually fit in a wallet. It's not wallet size. So whoever designed this, I think, should be fired. But you guys have it easy, I feel like, because you'll be able to rely on your Excelsior pass for most of this access, having it on your smartphone, waving that in the face of the bouncer at the gym that you inevitably go to every morning, Emmanuel. And, you know, me, on the other hand, I don't know what I'm going to do since I was vaccinated out of state. I have researched whether or not I can get the Excelsior pass with an out-of-state vaccine, and apparently you cannot. So I guess I'm just going to be ordering takeout for a while.
In Pennsylvania.
Yes, in Pennsylvania. Although I am in New York tonight.
They let you in.
They let me in.
Wow.
They let me in these days. I don't think that the barriers go up at the Lincoln Tunnel until early September.
Well, the wallet situation is easily solved. I tape it to my shirt, so I always know where it is. And that
right.
way I don't even have to have a conversation with people at the door. They just look at me, and they usually nod or sometimes roll their eyes. But, yeah, I'm trying, folks. I'm trying to find the outrage here. I really am, and I feel like I'm not doing enough. People are upset at this. You know, when I first heard that there was a vaccine earlier in the year, I naively thought people would be happy and that they would be crowding to get the vaccine. But I realize now, I'm in 21st century America, and no, people are never happy. We need to find something to complain about. And that's what I need your help with, is to find something to complain about here, having to show this card, this piece of paper that has my name on it and shows that I was vaccinated. That is an attack on my freedom somehow, because, yeah, that's where it breaks down. I can't figure out the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, I frankly, you know, see it as not something that should has come as a surprise to most of us. I mean, there are so many. Now, if you can hear that, obviously I'm still in the city. There are so many barriers to doing certain things with public institutions based on vaccination status to begin with. I mean, I can't send my kids to public school in New York without providing some form of proof of vaccination. And I think traveling internationally, it's been that way for quite a while as well. So, you know, this is just, I think, a public health initiative to protect the majority of citizens, and it recognizes that being vaccinated is not a choice that has entirely to do with oneself, but it has to do with a duty to third parties, the duty to protect others, and an overall responsibility of the government to ensure the public health.
Okay, I got it. So Rand Paul says that we don't have that duty to defend other people. All right, we don't have to be courteous. Just ask his neighbor, he knows. We don't have to think of anyone but ourselves. And again, that's what the Founding Fathers had in mind when they started this whole thing.
Sure. Well, I mean, in one sense, though, I mean, there is this competing legal doctrine about the duty to help other people or the duty to rescue. And in most states in the United States, if you see a dying man on the street, he's about to bleed out, you could save him by, you know, putting a salve to the wound, creating a tourniquet, or you have no obligation to do so. You have every right to just continue walking down that street.
He made that choice.
You didn't see that.
He made that choice, and that's, yeah, you know, that's on him.
Well, but that's the duty to rescue. That's the duty to affirmatively step in and help somebody who is in need. We don't have that duty, right? In this country, in almost, I think, every single state. I'm not sure if it's if that's the law in every state, but in most states it is. But the duty to not harm others, I think that's not only moral, but also can be considered to be embodied within the common law of the United States as well. Because, you know, we have these laws prohibiting assaults and batteries and menacing and all these things that we do to third parties that could be harmful. They're prohibited.
When are they not harmful? When is assault and battery not harmful?
I guess when it's consensual. That would be my guess.
Well, okay.
A lot
of
people do like to consent to that kind of thing.
I don't think that's what the Founding Fathers had in mind.
Well, you never know. They, you know, they had some funny clothes. In any event, I think that the duty to help others is very different from the duty not to harm others. And I think that being vaccinated is a duty that we impose on ourselves, or rather that society imposes on ours, and we have to fulfill to not harm other people. So I think philosophically it's very different. But to be the, you know, the real devil's advocate here, we mentioned this on Overtime, I think, several weeks ago, but, you know, the law about forced vaccinations in this country hasn't always been great. It's led to some pretty horrible legal precedents. Things that happened, you know, 100 years ago. But again, we've evolved as a country over this last 100 years. Vaccines have, I think, a permanent place in our culture. They're rationally related to public health, and the government can impose these certain restrictions without it offending constitutional norms or principles.
You know, I was reading something. I think it was Thomas Jefferson way back in the 1700s who regretted not getting a smallpox vaccine for, I believe, one of his kids.
That was Ben Franklin.
That was Ben Franklin. Okay.
Yeah, that was Ben Franklin.
I didn't know they had vaccines all the way back in the 1700s, but
it wasn't anti-vax movements.
Well, that's how he said it. It was his words, literally his words.
No, I'm pretty sure he used the word an inoculation.
You might
rather
be right.
Than a vaccine.
Okay, fine, inoculation. But that's still a pretty big word for them to use back in the 1700s.
Yes, it certainly was. A lot of syllables for an 18th century man. Mm-hmm. But it was very similar to what a vaccine was. An inoculation in the 18th century involved usually, you know, it were some kind of sores or pus from somebody who was sick. And what you would do is you would take a little bit of that and inject it into the skin of a child. So essentially you were infecting them with the pus of somebody else who was infected. It's a pretty horrific process when you think about it. And so it's understandable that Ben Franklin would not have wanted to inflict this upon his child. But the whole idea of the inoculation and a vaccination was very similar, in that you were injecting a small amount of a deadly virus or disease into the body so that you could fight it and the body would learn how to protect against it in the future. And so, you know, even though there's a difference, I think that it's a distinction with a minor difference. But the sentiment was absolutely on par. And I believe that Ben Franklin's young child, I think it was a 4 or 5 year old child, died from, I think it was smallpox. Was it smallpox?
I think it was smallpox.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. I mean, it's a very, very sad story. But there's no guarantee that the inoculation itself wouldn't have killed the child, because you weren't injecting a weakened version of smallpox into the system. You were injecting, you know, pus or sores or some kind of you know, bodily fluid.
Here's the actual quote from Ben Franklin. In 1736, I lost one of my sons, a fine boy of 4 years old, by the smallpox taken in the common way. I long regretted bitterly and still regret that I had not given it to him by inoculation. So it's kind of a strange phrasing, but it's basically saying, you know, take precautions, you stupid idiots who are anti-doing the right thing.
And very much regretful.
Mm-hmm. Very much regretful, yes. Rob, go ahead.
It is for the public good, and we have long been used to other surrenders of personal data when it's for the public good. You know, when you go into a bar or a nightclub, someplace for grown-ups, everyone's checked at the door to make sure that they're old enough to be, you know, drinking what they serve and dancing and doing whatever the heck else you want to do in one of those places. And, you know, you're supposed to be able to go in secure in the knowledge that everyone else is a grown-up like you. And, you know, that leads to whatever it leads to. But, you know, if I'm going into a restaurant, I don't mind giving up my name at the door because, yeah, I am going to be paying with a card that has my name on it, most likely. But even if not, I like going in and being able to assume that everyone around me has been vaccinated. Everyone around me is doing the right thing. Everyone around me is not putting the people around them at unnecessary risk. I mean,
Rob,
if you're into total anonymity,
Rob,
maybe eating out now is not for you.
No, I mean, I see what you're trying to say here, okay, but... You know, it's a stepping stone. It's basically you're giving away a little bit of your identity every single time. When you go to the restaurant and they ask you table for how many, and they ask you for a name, you don't give them your name. You give them somebody else's name. You hold on to that anonymity as tightly as you possibly can, and then you just don't give away anything. I'm trying really hard here, but it's so difficult. Yes, Gila, please help.
I'm willing to say that this is actually almost more anonymous because. Here's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. We went to a Panera Bread a couple of months ago, and they not only asked for my name when I got there, they asked for my phone number and my email address.
Wow.
For contact tracing purposes.
Huh.
This way, if all I have to say is what my name is, that's fine. Also, I never give my name at restaurants, but that's because my name is very hard to pronounce, so I usually give the name of whoever I'm with.
You know, Radio Shack was way ahead of its time. They were doing contact tracing back in the 70s. Boy. Well, that is something. That is amazing. Yes, Rob.
But when you have your dinner, you know, if you're that concerned about your anonymity, it's really hard to, you know, eat your dinner and have a good time when you're wearing your plastic V for Vendetta Guy Fawkes mask. It makes a big mess, and, you know, it's not good for anyone around you.
I just think... It's not nearly the scandal, and in fact, these moments are reminders to us all that we're not necessarily living through sort of regular circumstances. And to that end, I just would say, you know, this is a real crisis, a worldwide crisis,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the hasty moves to reopen in many ways, some of the guidelines being so varied and disparate around the country, and the real deluge of misinformation that this inoculation program has been met with. I mean, real headwinds in getting that critical group of hesitant folks that are being, you know, submitted to all kinds of postings and opinions and pundits. Some of that's changed in the last couple of weeks just because the numbers are so crazy now. I mean, we're talking doubling and projections of 100,000 new cases, I think, is where we're hoping to level off with this wave.
Mm-hmm.
So let's maybe, you know, I guess temper our expectations that things have been normal now, and this is all so unusual. No, this is ongoing. It's been ongoing, and this was the warning. We will have to take steps in the reverse if things don't continue in the right way. And right now, I guess in a lot of hotspots, the numbers don't look right. We talked about this with
a lot of people having the crap scared out of them right now because they see these numbers. They see that things are going badly. And deteriorating rapidly in those places where people... You say hesitant. I say obstinate. Because hesitancy means you can be convinced with information. And obstinance is when you just refuse to listen to the information. And that's what we're seeing on a wide scale. And, you know, it would be very interesting to figure out just how we got there in the first place. Is it all Trump? Is it all politics? Is it all left versus right, or is it something else? You know, we really need to do some serious psychological studies as to how we got into this position in the first place of literally arguing with people who don't want the virus to go away. And there's no other way to say it, because there is one way to get it to go away, and that's to get a vaccination against it. It doesn't go away on its own. It will never go away if you don't get vaccinated, unless something really horrible happens and there's no more life forms left to infect. You know, we're a hacker show. We deal with issues of privacy and anonymity and questioning authority all the time. And, you know, we've been lectured by many people saying, how can you say things like this? How can you give away your privacy? As you can see, I'm really struggling to figure out how something as simple as showing proof of vaccination going into a gym or a restaurant in any way is a violation of your privacy. It gives away any kind of location information. Yeah, the smartphone app, I could see that being used as a tracking device if we allow it to be. If someone simply takes a look at it, that's harmless. If they scan it, enter it into a database, yeah, that's something to be concerned with. I'm not seeing that happening. Of course, I haven't used it a single time, but these are the things to look out for. But we also, you know, we can't be so paranoid that we forget about common sense. We forget about things that actually are there to help us. And this kind of thing, it's there for our own good.
Yeah, and I think one of the other reasons you hear a lot from people that are interviewed about this is a certain toughness. They feel they are tough enough to withstand coming down with this disease, and or that they won't be infected in the first place because they are so tough and so forth. And I really would like to see that same toughness face a simple shot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think if you're that tough, you can handle a vaccine.
Exactly. There's a lot of really bizarre, paradoxical kind of logic floating around, and it really needs to be kind of met with a little bit more common sense.
All right, let's move on. And folks, if you haven't gotten the vaccine yet, please go out and get it. No matter where you are, our future depends on it. It really does. It's super important. This was nothing compared to what I was battling over the past, quite a while. I've been dealing with Amazon. You might have heard of them. Lots and lots of fun whenever you have to try and fix a problem. I've been involved in this project over the past year or so where I'm trying to share family slides that were basically on slide carousels for the last few decades. I'm trying to share them with other family members. And so I figured it would be a great idea to simply digitize all these and make them into TIFF files and then upload them someplace where I could share them with other members of the family. And I found something called Amazon Photos, which seemed to fit the bill pretty nicely. It allowed you to basically upload pictures and view them on say, if you have an Alexa show, one of those Alexa devices that has a video screen. You could actually have it share with that device, and you could see your pictures. And that worked great. You know, I started using that a bunch of months ago, and it was amazing. I was thinking, hey, I could just share this Amazon photo collection with various relatives, and they could just see the photos show up on their Alexa show device. It's perfect. But then, one day, the people at Alexa or Alexa Show or whatever department it was decided it's time for an upgrade. They upgraded their software. And when they did that, they broke everything. It certainly did not work as it used to work. And where I could see photos before, basically staying on the screen for about a minute, them going on to the next one, kind of a nice way to just see various memories of the family go by throughout the course of a day. They decided, no, a minute, nobody wants that. We're going to make it 3 seconds. 3 seconds is all you got. And if the slow setting, okay, the slow setting will be 10 seconds. So right away, it's like rapid fire picture changing. I didn't like that very much. Then what they also did was they decided that the clock, which was mandatory on the Alexa Show devices, had to be increased in size so that people could see it, because obviously, that's what you have it for, so you can see the damn clock. So now the clock takes up 25% of the screen space, obliterating a good part of the photos that you're trying to share. You know, there are people all over the place complaining about these things, saying, this is awful, this is not what we want. And if you look at the message boards, the feedback that they have on Amazon, you see hundreds of people, literally hundreds of people complaining about the same thing and no response at all. And it's not just Amazon. It's all these massive companies that have what they consider to be support. You complain on Twitter, you know, you tag them on Twitter, you instantly get a reply from somebody saying, oh, I'm so sorry you had this problem. Please contact us in direct message or we'll reach out to you. And then you go through this song and dance for a few days where it seems like they're trying to help you, but then you wind up at a dead end and right back where you started because you bitch them out again on Twitter, and then somebody else comes and says the same thing and invites you to another useless banter fest that goes absolutely nowhere. So, and I didn't mention the other new feature that the Alexa show had, where instead of going through all your pictures, it goes through three and then stops for an hour, goes through another three, stops for another hour, and it became completely useless. I took it off that device. It was unusable. But I figured, you know, all right, I've uploaded all these things to Amazon. I can at least share a link with people so that they can see the photos on their computers. And I thought, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. And I started looking through them myself, and I noticed that I was seeing a couple of pictures more than once. You know how when you're, I don't use Facebook very often, but I use Facebook and I scroll through friends, for instance, and it doesn't seem to be a top to bottom list. It seems like they repeat. Like you're scrolling down, and then all of a sudden you see somebody that you saw before, because it's some kind of a weird loop that they've got going on, or maybe it's some sort of a setting. Similar thing on Amazon Photos. I was going through all the photos, and I just noticing. Some of them were showing up more than once. So that was a little bit disturbing. And then I downloaded a bunch of what I call albums, because I made each slide carousel into an album. I figured I'd keep the order that they were uploaded in. And I noticed when I downloaded them that, hey, I was getting duplicates when I downloaded them too. So it wasn't my imagination. It wasn't just on the screen. They actually, for some reason, were duplicates. I figured I must have done something wrong when I was trying to get the Alexa show to read it properly. Maybe I copied one of the albums over, and there are more. So I deleted everything, and then I found out that deleting everything doesn't delete everything. It puts it in the trash where it's not deleted, and you have to say delete forever and wait for that to happen. Did that, uploaded everything all over again. Took about half a day, and then decided to try and download the entire thing as one massive zip file. I had 1,644 different slides that were digitized, and when I downloaded it, I noticed after merging all the different zip files, because it made something like 12 zip files for downloading, when I merged them, I had file conflicts, because there were duplicates again. And when I got rid of the duplicates, I only had 1,253 pictures instead of 1,644. It literally erased pictures and replaced them with duplicates. So, you know, at this point, I'm on Twitter complaining about Amazon Photos. They're reaching out to me. I'm talking to them. And one person said, yeah, you know, this is a known problem, but it won't happen if you get the app instead of the website. So they gave me a link to the app, which didn't work because it wouldn't install. So I had to go to another machine. And then I had to, of course, copy all the pictures over to that machine, delete all the pictures from Amazon, I delete them forever, upload them again to Amazon, and go through this entire thing, which took a day and a half, only to find out that the exact same thing happened, which is exactly what I expected would happen, because how could the app make any difference? It's all on their end. But they will never admit this. So I literally spent the entire weekend trying to solve their problems for them and not getting anywhere, not having them in any way acknowledge that this is a problem with their system. They told me, clear your history. They told me to reboot my computer. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't tell me to unplug it.
Didn't you do something with cookies, too?
They said to clear my cookies and my cache and all that. I was using different browsers. I know that wasn't the problem. And nine times out of ten, the consumer knows what they're doing. And, you know, we have this impression that it's always the customer that messes something up. No, sometimes it's the mega corporations that mess something up, and they don't care enough to fix it. Because every problem I've had, I've noticed many, many people complaining about similar or the same things. And always, it's the same response. Nothing. No response at all. It doesn't get fixed. The dialogue gets closed, and you have to move on to something else. Well, I moved on to Google Photos. Having some problems with that, in that I can't seem to make zip files for no reason at all. It just doesn't do it. It's very hard to share with people who aren't using Gmail. They want to basically bring everybody in. But at least they can count. At least I'm able to have the same number of photos coming out as they were going in. I think that's a very important part of archiving photos, is to have the same number coming out as going in. So that was my little adventure in corporate photo archiving land. I don't recommend it. I think probably the best thing to do is put everything on a flash drive and send it in the mail.
Yeah, you could definitely do that sort of thing, because digital photo frames are a thing that have existed for a long time. They're a little screen. You load pictures on it with a USB, or, you know, stick a flash drive in it or whatever. They're very inexpensive, and they do what you want to do. You can configure the display times and, you know, the cycling and all that good stuff. And, yeah, they are very cheap devices. And it's funny that Amazon's, you know, Echo device that has, you know, Amazon's zillion-dollar infrastructure behind it, gives a measurably worse experience, and also it's cloud based, and you don't actually control how these things work or where they go. It's the crap version, it's the cloud version. And Emmanuel, I happen to know that you have access to your own machines that are on the internet that mm-hmm. you could upload things to and share without involving advertising companies that sell your data to increase shareholder value. So
yeah, but yeah. Rob, you know, try telling an elderly relative how to use a Linux-based machine. You know, you need the interface. And one thing that both Amazon and Google have are decent interfaces. The problem is they just don't work properly, and you wind up losing things as a result of that, because I guess they assume people really don't care all that much. This is where I left it. This is the last message I sent to them. We're just going around and around here. The rep I just retold the whole story to has no solutions. Seriously, this is about having numbers add up. On my screen, where I uploaded 1,644 photos, it says I have 1.6K items, which is correct. But when I select all, it shows 1,253. Please, solve that. And they're working on it. No, they're not working on it, but nobody's gotten back to me. Nobody ever will. It's great to be able to do these things yourself, and we do many of these things ourselves. We run our own mail servers, run our own websites, and it's great. But something like this, where you want to be able to selectively pick photos and download the right ones and be able to browse through them, yeah, it's definitely doable. It's work. And I figure, you know, if there's a service out there and you're already paying for it through another service, it should work. And I'm just here to say that doesn't work, and we need more human attention to these things. I am so sick of talking to bots that you realize you're not talking to a human. And sometimes when you seem to be talking to a human in some other part of the world, it sounds like they care, but they always wind up getting, and I'm generalizing when I say always, because I have had good experiences, they get to a point where they just can't do any more. They can't get past their own end-if loops. And it's just frustrating, because we could be doing so much better.
I think this particular problem isn't getting as much attention because both of the larger entities you named that have substantial network capacity and other services and social communications and stuff in their various platforms, they're more than capable of doing it, but their profit motive.
Yeah.
They're so obsessed with monetizing everything. And your private photos shared with your private family doesn't involve ads. It doesn't involve... I mean, all of what you just said doesn't really even speak to them holding your art hostage and mining all of the visual information there, facial recognition. There are so many things they could be doing with your stuff that you're not even questioning. You just want basic functionality. But they can't transparently sell you anything, so why care? And that's why I don't think there isn't a team. But the other thing is, there's this trend of just making sales, making a product that looks good enough to sell, and then hitting those sales numbers. There's no accountability or recourse or guarantee or anything along with it. It's just, oh, we released this new thing. And it's more for them at this point, because I feel like they're already wielding the control with a lot of the hardware devices, home assistants and so forth. They can reprogram them and control them infinitely more than the average consumer. They're not showing you how to customize it. They're not showing you how to sideload software or to connect it to your own cloud server to manage it the way you want. They're not actually giving you any control. And, in fact, just the opposite. You've the veneer of a product that does something that you want, but it absolutely doesn't.
Yeah, I think that's the key, in that they're not giving you any ability to make changes yourself. You have to rely on them. And they make an upgrade or a software revision, you have to live with the decisions they make. For instance, the 10-second maximum showing of a picture, if you're sharing your photos on an Alexa show, that is ridiculous. You should be able to enter the values that you want to live with. You shouldn't have to. Everyone is different. You know, some people don't want a clock to take up 25% of their screen. Some people don't want a clock at all. Some people want a clock that looks different. You know, you should have, it's not like the technology doesn't exist. It's just the will has to exist to allow people to do this. When you think that the customers are all stupid and all the same and they can't make these decisions for themselves, and I've seen this, I know people who think this way of the populace, and I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be in that class of people that thinks they're above it all and that everybody else is just an ignorant end user. No, these are the people that make all of this possible. The people out there who consume and who basically use all of these things that are invented and distributed. We need to listen to them. We need to figure out ways that everybody can manipulate technology to their liking. And this is very much in line with what we say all the time about old and new technology. Old technology shouldn't just be cast aside. We should figure out ways to adapt it, to learn from it, to build things that are better, and know how it all basically comes about.
I think it also has a little attribute of homogenization, because, I mean, who really wants to go see someone else's photo frame look exactly like the photo frame they have in their own home? So it's conditioning people in this strange way, I think, probably a parallel topic, to kind of conform and just accept this conditioned environment or user interface or whatever it is that they're presenting.
And Rob, just to speak to your point about the photo frames, I, in my desperation trying to get the Alexa show to work, I bought a photo frame. In fact, I even bought another Alexa show because I heard Alexa show 8s were basically intolerant of certain configurations, but Alexa Show 5s weren't. So I bought an Alexa Show 5, and it's exactly the same. So I just realized only Amazon can get me to buy more of their inferior products to try and fix their problems. But anyway, I bought the photo frame, and I realized after buying it that it doesn't read TIFFs, doesn't read TIFF files. So then I had to convert all 1,644 of my damn photos into a format that it liked. And then once I did that and copied it over, I didn't have any control over what displayed when. You just had to pretty much wait, which, you know, was fine. It's what it is. But it's not what I'm trying to do here, where people can pick photos and download them and save them to their own computers and look at them whenever they feel like.
Yeah, and you make a very good point about that. And also, I think it's time we went back, you know, we as in, like, general users of the internet, and you're right, we do need usable interfaces, we need links that we can send to non-technical people in our families or circles or whatever, but there are companies out there whose business is images and hosting images and sharing images, and there are companies out there who do this who are not subsidiaries of Amazon or Google or another massive mega corporation that just, you know, has a little image service as a throwaway loss leader to pull you in and do their main business with you. And I think maybe we in general have lost sight of the value in supporting maybe a smaller site somewhere that that has, you know, maybe a free plan and maybe a pro plan that you can throw a little money at that you can use to actually functionally, you know, share images. I mean, Flickr is back again. I'm seeing more and more people using that. I've been looking into these options.
Wait, Flickr is considered smaller and independent?
Yeah, they're no longer owned by Yahoo, Verizon, that sort of thing. They're now owned by a company called SmugMug, whose business is images. They're not, you know, they're not a Google-level mega corporation. They're just there now to provide images and host images and let you share the images. And, you know, it seems that when a site does one thing well, maybe it's worth using for that rather than a site that does a zillion things badly so they can sell you ads.
No, you definitely have a great point there. And I recall so many instances, like the company that makes our robots for printing discs.
Primera,
yeah. That's a great example. I don't know if they still make robots, but when we made DVDs all the time, that's the company that we went through, and we'd have problems occasionally, and whenever we contacted them, we always got a human being that worked to fix the problem, and always did, always was able to. Small company, but they cared. And those are the kind of people that you should be supporting. You know, the small companies with actual human beings that will respond to problems and that care, that want to fix the problems because they want to make something as good as possible. They don't, you know, transfer you to some artificial intelligence bot somewhere to try and eliminate you from their queue. They actually are in the same game as you are, trying to make something work as much as possible.
They have funny stories about that. There's a small repair shop, too, that also does replaces and repairs and refurbishes this particular robot. And
the guy
who runs it is a preacher, actually. So he's, you know, probably makes his, like, you know, evangelizing discs or whatever, but he's really into fixing these things and does a great job.
Yeah, you find somebody who is just impassioned about a particular model of a particular machine and knows everything about it. That is the person to go to. You don't throw it out. You get somebody who knows how to take care of it and appreciates it. Because, you know, some of these, especially, you know, older machines are built to last. And it's just incredible. That's a real workhorse, that robot that we sent out to be repaired by the preacher. Yeah, that was quite a story. Let's move on to a couple other things, because I've just been bitching about one thing or another this whole hour. Here's something to be happy about in Australia. Is this Australia? Looks like phone calls are going to be free from payphones. Actually, no, there's a caveat here. Local and national, and calls to mobile phones. So they won't be calling the United States. International calls are not included there. But the phone company announced that these calls from a Telstra payphone, Telstra is a phone company down there, would no longer incur a charge. That means the days of scrambling for 50 cents in change, which apparently is what it cost in Australia, 50 Australian cents, or devising a code involving a predetermined number of rings were effectively over. They still do that? Wow. You know, my grandparents used to do that, you know, to let us know when they got home safely after visiting. They'd ring twice. Was that phone fraud? I don't know. The phone company would probably say it was. Alex, what do you say?
Well, my parents and relatives used to do something similar. They would make a collect call. So if we took a flight, you know, to Florida or something, you had to come back. You know, you didn't want to make a long-distance phone call from the airport. It would have been, you know, extortionately expensive. So we used to make a collect call home to my father or mother or whatever from Alice Fine, which is, you know, like all is fine.
I get it. Wow.
Yep. Alice Fine. This was, you know, my mother's innovation, I think, in phone freaking.
That's something. Wow. And that's a level of fraud above what my grandparents were doing.
that's most true. Definitely. But, you know, when I started to learn Italian in high school, too, I was so curious about, you know, other cultures and speaking to people in Italian. I used to just make random collect calls to cities in Italy, just to hear people answer the phone and hear the cadence of their speech. It was very similar to me. fascinating me rather, in that, you know, but speaking of Australia and free phone calls, one of the things I have distinct memories of from probably 1993 or 1994 at the 2600 meetings in New York that used to be around the huge lobby of payphones in the Citigroup building was somebody, a phone freak from Australia, calling up the payphones, whose name was Phony, if I recall correctly. That was his phone freak handle. And he used to use a device that would shock the payphones in Australia. It would administer some kind of electrical shock to the payphones that would then allow him to call around the world at his convenience. It was always fascinating me, and he called almost every single meeting. There were always people on the phone with Phony.
See, that's the difference. That's the difference between America and Australia. We just sent little beeps and tones, but they actually send electrical shocks to get their phones.
Shock treatment of a payphone. But
did you have a message for Phony?
Well, I think Phony, you know, look, he's I think his wish is half true here, right? He can go to a payphone and call up his friends, but he's still going to have to administer shock treatment to the payphones, I think, to call New York.
The Telstra CEO, his name is Andy Penn. And, oh, it says in parentheses, Phony. It's his nickname. Said the move to make every payphone free would cost the company around $5 million a year. Just watching over the last 18 months how they've played a role in emergency situations through the brush fires and keeping people connected, and particularly those that are vulnerable and disadvantaged, I just thought we've got to a point where we can make this free. It's not a big deal for Telstra. Andy Penn is now my favorite CEO in the world. Okay, no, seriously, this guy gets it. Not only is he being generous and giving something for free that he could easily charge for, but he's recognizing the importance of payphones and how they played an instrumental role in emergencies when you didn't have cell service, when there was an important message that needed to be gotten out. You have to have these devices. It's a perfect example of old technology existing to back up the new technology.
So they have to be referred to as public phones then, right?
Of course. Because
they're not pay for anymore. Like, they're not pay phones. They're just simply public phones or phones for the public.
Yeah, well, they always called them public phones, but I guess, legally.
But now they're only exclusively public phones.
Unless you're calling international. I'm not sure how that works. But you know what? It's worth a trip to Australia to find out. And Andy Penn, you just convinced me. Thank you. Thank you for that.
It's interesting if other systems follow that, you know, if other carriers and other places realize the benefit.
Hey, I wanted to share something with people. We've been doing this project now for the last few weeks where we release lost audio from our archives that we have been collating over the past year or so. About the same amount of time we've been collating photos. But this went a lot more smoothly because we're doing it ourselves. Every day we release something new. And I believe this was yesterday. We released an episode of a show that I used to do called News of the World. That was a shortwave appreciation program. We basically would listen to shortwave radio stations in English and broadcast some of the newscasts that came from different countries.
I like it because you also gave some background and a little bit of insight into some of the on-air stuff that you're hearing.
Yeah, you always got to explain things. It's important, and people really pick up on it. The whole collection appears on 2600.com/audio-segments, or you can get to it from our main page at 2600.com. I want to just play you an excerpt from yesterday's release of a bit of News of the World. You'll hear what's known as an interval signal, which basically is a musical chime that repeats to let you know that your radio station is about to come on the air. You recognize those particular musical chimes. Now, the broadcast could be in all different languages, but if it's a strong signal, it's probably aimed at your country. And, you'll hear who starts out this particular broadcast.
Thank you. This is Radio Moscow. There is Bell's first the headlines. The West German Foreign Minister Hans-Dietrich Genscher has completed his official visit to the Soviet Union on Tuesday. In Moscow, participants in international forums, science, technology, and peace have handed to Andrei Romyko their address to the heads of state and governments. And Poland observed its national holiday, the Day of Rebirth.
Okay, well, that's all we're going to hear right now, but it's fascinating, fascinating stuff, and that's just one example of the audio that we're releasing on a daily basis. Again, the website, 2600.com/audio-segments, new piece gets released every day. We started this in mid-July, and it's going to be going through October, I believe. That's how much audio we've got lying around. Interviews, just fun musical bits, outtakes, some of the worst newscasts ever broadcast on radio that I was involved in. And it really is kind of neat to be sharing all this. We did some things in Iqaluit, which is currently in Nunavut. It was in Northwest Territories when I visited it back in 1987, I believe. And we were broadcasting some of their local radio and how the radio host there was getting kids to call in and imitate ravens on the air. So he'd basically pick up the phone and instantly there'd be somebody pretending they were a raven. That's local radio. That was an incredible thing to record. Yeah, get your fix.
And if you want to find it quickly, there's a slide. Just look for something that says The Lost Tapes,
yes.
And that'll take you right to the segments page.
And you can go to any of the things we've already released. You can download them. You can stream them. Yes, go ahead, Rob.
I just want to mention really quick, we are doing a 2600 meeting this week,
Friday. Right. That's right.
And we are doing them here in New York. We are doing it once again virtually and physically. We are meeting outdoors. So if you want to come to our meeting in person, it is outdoors at the entrance to the atrium on 53rd and 3rd. If you want to attend virtually, there will be a video conference meeting as well. So check out nyc2600.net for all the info on that and join us.
Now, similar to last month, if you're involved in a meeting, there are just several qualifications that you have to meet. You have to be in an area where the total vaccination rate is 40% or above, and we're seeing more and more places meet that, which is great. You have to contact us. You can either email us, meetings@2600.com, or tweet to us or send us a direct message. Our Twitter handle is 2600meetings, 2600meetings, and let us know the details of your meeting. Now, if you had a meeting before, you know, everything went crazy in 2019 or 2020, it's not going to automatically be relisted. We need to hear from you. We need to know that there are people still there that are interested in doing this. If there was no meeting anywhere near you, this is a great opportunity for you to get some attention for the meeting that you want to start. So simply email us and tell us where you want to have your meeting. They generally take place the first Friday of every month between the hours of 5 and 8. That's flexible. So let us know if you need to change those hours. But again, meetings@2600.com or 2600meetings on Twitter. That's the best way to get a hold of us. And, of course, you can go to 2600.com/meetings to see a list of all the meetings that are taking place. Currently, they're all in the United States. We expect that to be reestablished in other parts of the world as we hear from them. But Alex, I know that a lot of your history comes from 2600 meetings in the past.
It does indeed. Yeah, there's been a lot of hijinks and a lot of learning that's happened at them. You know, things and techniques and things I still use to this day that are all a product of my misspent youth, mainly at 2600 meetings.
And now you're a prestigious lawyer, so just. Think about that, kids, what you could be in for.
That's true.
We're out of time, but we're going to overtime. Go to youtube.com, channel 2600. You can join us there or just go to the link that's on the main 2600.com page. You can call us, and we'll talk to you. That's for the next hour starting at 8 p.m. It's all about knowledge. We'll see you next week. Write to us at oth@2600.com.